You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome back to another episode of the Noble and Roosh Show. I'm your host, Roosh Williams.
Zach Noble.
Bang, bang, man. Today we got Mike Muscala of the Oklahoma City Thunder in the house. Mike, how you doing?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me. How you doing?
I'm good, man. Thank you for coming. We appreciate your time. So, Mike, just wanted to kind of start things off, man. Like, tell us how the bubble was, what that whole experience was like, expectations, what was met, what wasn't met, what was exceeded, all that.
It was cool, man. I mean, they had everything well run in terms of the testing. We got tested every day for COVID. We had questionnaires. We would fill out in the morning, take our temperatures, take like blood, oxygen levels, something like that. Every morning, yeah. So we do that. I mean, so I think, you know, the NBA did a great job of making us all feel safe from a COVID standpoint. And, you know, having the three different hotel resorts, turning some of those into practice courts, you know, for the first couple of weeks we were there, obviously it was practice and preseason games, taking buses in between practice times and games. And, you know, it was cool. I mean, it got to be a little repetitive, but ultimately I really liked it just because, you know, it kept things simple. The food was good. They took really good care of us, and it just helped us all focus just on basketball and trying to, put a good product out on the court.
So were the luxuries nice enough where the mental aspect didn't come into play for you enough? I mean, that's what I've heard. It was more so just like a Hunger Games mental side of things, a little bit challenging from your daily rituals and activities.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it just depends how you look at it. You know, I think it was unique in the mental health, approach or mindset. You know, like I said, it would get repetitive. So that's probably where the biggest challenge was. It was like, how do you, kind of just not get too, not let those days kind of wear on you, if you will, since it's just the same routine, if you will. But finding, I think for me, I found a lot of joy just in playing with the guys, even though I wasn't necessarily getting a lot of minutes on the game, being able to go to the gym and just, you know, play 3-on-3, play 5-on-5, and get out there in kind of like in a unique environment that probably will never happen again, depending on, you know, I don't know what will happen next season. But, you know, they also let us go play golf. NBA was real cool about that. They reserved a lot of tee times at, like, the Disney golf resort. So that was super nice of them be able to go and just get outside for a little bit, play 9 holes was cool.
So was that covered, or do you guys pay for that out of pocket? Not that that's really that big of a deal.
It was awesome.
Oh, that's wild. That's awesome, man.
They gave golf balls. So when I sliced, like, 7 of them into the – every time I played, you know.
that was the main thing you did outside of hooping, though? You golfed a lot?
Yeah, I golfed. That was pretty much the big thing. I brought my Xbox, so played Call of Duty. Read a lot of books. Or not a lot, but for me, that was cool.
One.
So it was good. I think it was a good reminder for me just to know how to, like, pass time and just, you know, be grateful for what I have, man. You know, things were good. Things were good.
So from a basketball perspective, I think a lot of people going in were skeptical about, you know, whether it would replicate like what we usually see in the season. Me personally, I don't really see a difference at all as far as the basketball product goes. I feel like the hooping is still top notch. But what is your kind of opinion on how it all played out? And how do you compare the basketball product to, you know, the regular season when you guys are traveling and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, definitely, I think it's easier for guys to be rested. Just, you know, despite the fact that, you know, there's games every other day, I feel like usually, I could, correct me if I'm wrong, if you guys know, but like in the, you know, in each round of the playoffs, it's usually not, like when you travel back to a different city, you get 2 days in between a game.
Yep.
It's not 1 day in between. But I do think I realize, like, and I think I might be speaking for some other guys too, is that, you know, the not having to fly so often, I mean, you realize how much, I mean, we're used to it as NBA players, but, you know, you realize how much flying and getting in late, you know, going to bed late, all that stuff. I mean, it adds up, and, you know, we're used to dealing with it. But I think being able to have a game at, like, you know, in the regular season bubble games, and I can think even some playoff games, you know, there are some pretty early games. So to be able to be done by 5, 6 p.m., even 9, and then not have to go, you know, get back on a plane and land at 2 a.m., it helped guys, I think, recover more despite the fact that there was just one game in between games, 1 day in between.
Nope. Schedule-wise, this is the fastest turnaround probably, I don't know, in NBA history for every – I mean, back-to-back games in every game. But are you saying the lack there of flights and traveling buses-wise, I mean, you think that's made up for the difference in days that separated the games?
I think so. I mean, you know, I – from a personal perspective, I do feel like, yeah, it kind of, that's a good way to put it, kind of met in the middle. You know, the fact that there was only 1 day in between, but then you take out the flying, you know, I'm thinking of a way to even though.
So no excuses for being tired.
I mean, yeah, I guess you, I mean, you should ideally never try to have an excuse for being tired, you know, but it happens. I mean, hey, you know, like the thinking back on like a back-to-back game during the regular season before the bubble where you play at home and then fly or vice versa, play away and then fly back home and then play the next day after a flight. I mean, yeah, that's a tough one. That's a hard one to do, but being in a bubble on a back-to-back is like a whole lot easier. That's for sure.
I mean, look, when I, like if I'm traveling and I got to work the next day, I usually schedule.
That's a bitch.
I usually schedule a buffer day, right? Like if I got to work on Monday, I'm flying on Saturday. So Sunday I could chill. I could not imagine having to fly and then wake up, you know, fly like 3-4 in the morning, wake up and then go play a basketball game that night. So I couldn't imagine that. I think that getting the rest, it just makes sense that it would help not having to travel. It just makes sense that it would help. And I think we saw that, you know, I think we saw like game to game, there just wasn't, I don't know how to kind of describe it. It just seemed game to game, like it was the same game over and over. You didn't have like the kind of shifts and the ups and downs that you get like from the home and away kind of thing. So that's yeah. Like watching it, that's what it felt like.
Yeah. That's, yeah. I mean, obviously without real, you know, with fans there in person, you know, obviously it was such a different, you know, ambiance and atmosphere, especially in the playoffs.
Can you elaborate on that? Like without fans versus with fans, I've seen a lot of discussions where people say, oh, it doesn't matter. I'm personally of the belief that like you guys are professionals, you do it, you know, this is your job, you're used to it. But I just can't help but think that like hearing these people scream in the background, it like has some type of effect. Like, can you elaborate on how you felt?
Yeah, I mean, it's gotta be probably, you know, a combination of two. I mean, yeah, as NBA, as professional athletes, we're used to there being a lot of people at games, you know, 15, 20,000 people. But so we're used to that. But I think it's still, even though we're used to it, it still matters, you know, like you feel like you go out for a game in the middle of January somewhere and there's only 8,000 people at the game. You feel that as a player. Now you go out and do your job, obviously, and you try to do it the best you can, but of course, there are differences, and you feel the energy as a human being. I mean, there's no way around it. So,
no, go for it.
Yeah. So I think, you know, that, and you feel the energy of your home crowd. I mean, I actually like playing on the road a lot too, because you feel like you go out there and everyone's kind of rooting against you. I think that's fun. But then playing in the bubble was also cool because it was kind of like playing in the summer, like an open gym. Where there's no one really watching in terms of fans, yet there are a lot of people watching virtually. So I think that was fun too. But it just creates different energy. And I think, Bruce, what you're saying, you know, probably seemed true for me was that it was more just kind of, you know, it was just the game more itself. And it wasn't so much of the energy of the crowd, which I do think, you know, plays a role in the playoffs.
I was just going to say, like, the Thunder specifically, like, that home court is wild. Those people show up every game, like, before tip-off. Because, like I said, I'm a Houston fan, and we're known for not really having that kind of crowd until it's, like, a big game. So I can imagine, like, you know, playing for the Thunder in the playoffs. Like, personally, Houston playing Oklahoma City, I was glad that it was in the bubble because I, you know, it went seven games regardless, so I guess it didn't matter. But it's an intimidating environment even when you're watching it on TV. And then on the flip side of that, you got guys like Westbrook that, like, I don't know if you saw the clip, but, like, he like makes a big play and he yelled at the sideline and like they pan over and it's just like the moms with their
yeah. babies. Screaming at babies then picking fights with Rondo's brother.
Yeah. So, but yeah, what were you going to say?
No, I'm with you, man. Like the basketball just seemed very synonymous and very similar every game in and game out. Like there's no momentum shifts, there's no swings, and that has a lot to do with the crowd. I mean, all these players I've talked to, and many of them say it really hasn't impacted them or the game or anything like that, but it's hard for me to believe that. It really is, because I truly don't think we would have seen the Nuggets come back from 3-1 twice if it wasn't for the bubble, you know, with the fans and the crowd atmosphere and all that, just the pressure of that on their back and just feel people breathing a little bit. I mean, there'd be a lot more missed free throws in my estimation as well, because free throw percentage is up a decent amount. But with that said, there's a lot of performances just individually. I just don't think we would have seen if it wasn't for the bubble. Just Mike, you went on to say it's an open gym atmosphere and everybody's saying that. I think dudes are hooping on another level in open gym yet day in and day out more consistently because they're just free and playing within themselves a lot more versus a system, which can be really tough for people.
Yeah, I suppose it's kind of, you know, comparing apples to oranges in a way. You know, it's two completely different things. But that's interesting that you noticed that the free throw percentages have gone up. You know, it'd be interesting to look at, you know, more stats when it's all said and done and kind of compare it that way.
Yeah, I also think just from the human element, man, like referees are humans too. And I feel like it's impossible as a referee to not feel that momentum from a home crowd kind of breathing down your neck and how that would potentially influence your decision. But I guess we'll have to see. But
you couldn't get any shittier, could they?
I don't know. I mean, hey, like home court or not, they're still sending in Scott Foster to do what Scott Foster does. So I guess it doesn't matter. But but shifting from that, man. So Oklahoma City played Houston in the first round. I wanted to ask, you know, did you guys as a team have a specific opponent in mind that you wanted? Was it just kind of doesn't matter who we get, we're ready to play? And then in addition to that, how did you feel you individually and your team, and maybe even specifically Chris Paul, given his history with the Rockets, how did you feel going into that matchup against Houston and throughout?
Yeah, you know, I think obviously we knew 3-6, especially we're close in the West in terms of the seeding. So I think for a while I was kind of looking at it, but then I was like, you know what, it's going to drive me nuts. Like things shifts every day by the game. So let's just go up, hoop, and let's try to feel good about what we're doing, you know, and go into the playoffs feeling like, you know, we're cohesive and guys are feeling good about their games. But obviously, I mean, yeah, you know, Houston, you know, I thought was a heck of a team. You know, they're so unique with their approach, and they had guys who could really just flat out play, man. And, you know, when you space the floor like that, but you got they had such good defenders and smart defenders, you know, and even though they, you know, quote unquote small ball, you know, I think they did such a good job rebounding. And, you know, James Harden is just a fantastic player. So, you know, it came down to the wire there. And obviously knowing that, you know, Chris had played for Houston, you know, I knew it was going to be a hard fought series, which it was, you know, and came down at the very end. So obviously wish that we had won at the end, but, you know, the better team won in the end. So it's all good. And yeah, I think I thought, you know, the series with the Rockets and the Lakers, you know, I thought it was going to go more games too. I stopped watching after probably the second or third game, but, you know, I was kind of surprised.
From your perspective, how what was your – I mean, what was the game plan going into the Rockets series and the strategy you guys were trying to purvey, I guess, and how did you guys execute that? How well did you execute that?
You know, I think a lot of it came down to one-on-one defense, trying to limit Harden, you know, and I think, you know, Russ obviously didn't play the first few games, so a lot of it was focused on Harden, trying to keep him in front as much as we could and not give out, you know, corner three kicks, slot three, you know, catch and shoot threes. I thought, you know, Robert Covington had a heck of a series. And Jeff Green, Eric Gordon, I mean, those guys can really play. So I think it was a lot of one-on-one defense trying to, you know, first think that and try to keep your guy up front. And then, you know, when people will get beat, knowing how to help and where to help from so we can have the proper rotation on the backside. Because when you got five guys out there who can shoot threes, you know, it makes it tough because you gotta be on your rotations. Because once you start getting in rotations, you know, at some point there's probably going to be a three that's open. So that's why the one-on-one defense was so important.
Do you think that it's a scenario specifically with that matchup where you understand that you're going to give up something and you're picking and choosing what you're giving up? And if so, could you maybe elaborate on what it was that you guys were comfortable giving up, kind of like maybe living with like a PJ Tucker corner, not corner, but like an elbow three, for example, or something like that?
Yeah. I mean, we definitely didn't want to give up corner threes. And I think a few times in the first couple games, me included, probably helped too much from the corners, from the weak side corners. But it's tough, you know, when you got someone like Harden coming in, getting to the rim, you know, you're taught your whole life to come over on that weak side and be there to help, but he's a really good passer. So, you know, did we say something in particular that we wanted to give up? Not really. We didn't try to say like, hey, let's let this player shoot a ton of these. And I think that's kind of really what, you know, that's the power of the 3-point shot, having guys who are willing and good shooters and who will keep shooting, you know, when they're open. That really makes it tough on a defense.
How did the tale of Dort come to be? How did this mythological creature come out of the woodwork? And
yeah, he did a fantastic job. I think, it's a good question. You know, that's the question probably for him. Hear more of his story. He's a really good dude. He deserves everything coming his way. I mean, he works hard. He's got a really good mindset, you know, especially after, I forget which game it was, maybe like 4 or 5. He, you know, I think he went like 0-for-9 from three. And for any player, that's, you know, a little tough and especially for a rookie, but I was really proud of him. The fact that, you know, obviously his defense is phenomenal, but he kept shooting, and then had that such a big game in game 7. I think he had at least 30 points or somewhere around there.
30 even.
And, you know, and he kept, yeah, 30 even. Okay. So, you know, and I think went 6-for-12 from three or something like that. So, I was really happy for him for that, because it wasn't so much, you know, it wasn't so much like making the threes. It was the mindset, and keeping that aggressive mindset, because like I was just saying with the Rockets, when you have everyone on a team, you know, when they're open, they're shooting it. That's what makes it hard. When you got guys who are going to, you're not going to want to shoot or pass it up when they're open, that makes it hard in the whole offense. So it was really cool to see him ball out there in game 7.
Yeah. Rest assured that all Rockets fans before the game knew that it was going to be a Lou Dort game. We just had the feeling. And once it started happening, everyone collectively was just thinking, yeah, of course, this is how it's going to go down. We're about to. And when I'll tell you, when he caught that three before Harden had the block and ended the series, I thought it was over. I thought it was death by Dort.
death by Dort. That's but, a hashtag for days.
But yo, to that effect, man. So the Thunder, look, preseason, there were very low expectations from the media. I personally never count Chris Paul out. I watched that guy hoop two of my favorite Rocket seasons ever for my team, and you've hooped with him, so you should know you can never count Chris Paul out. And I thought y'all had a good collection of talent. Maybe not like LeBron James, Kawhi Leonard names, but I mean, Danilo Gallinari is a veteran. He knows how to score. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is a great young talent. Dennis Schroeder kind of had a resurgence season for him, for himself, had a great season. I think should have been sixth man of the year. And then of course, Chris Paul anchoring. And so the Thunder outlived and outdid all expectations, and took the Rockets down to the very last second, and honestly could have won that series. So can you just kind of speak to the nature of the team, and how you guys, and even in the series, there was a point, I think when it was maybe 2-1, it was either 2-1 or 2-2, I can't remember, or 3-2, I can't remember. But Houston was going off in that third quarter. They had like 8 threes. It looked like they were putting their foot on your neck and it was going to be done. And then you came marching back, and each game that Oklahoma City won was won in the final seconds of the game, except for the overtime game. But that was also won in the final seconds of the game. So I'm kind of speaking to the nature of the grit that your team had. And I was just wondering if you could kind of elaborate on like the mindset and y'all's collective approach and just kind of like how y'all embodied that and put it out on the court.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is CP, man. Like you said, you can never count him out. And being able to play with him for a year, learned a lot from him and his mindset. And he's a special person, man, a special player for sure. And I think it started with him, to be honest. You know, his approach day in and day out, you know, from day one, coming in the preseason, you know, it was consistent. And that's somebody that, you know, you're going to go to war with, and that would be, you know, your leader, because he does it, man. Like he obviously sees the game and, you know, he's speaking what he sees, but he's out there doing it. And he's in, you know, he's in it every day. So especially, you know, for, with his years of experience, him, you know, buying into the group and, you know, and playing as hard as he did. And, it was fun to be a part of that, man. And we'd be able to see him do his thing, you know, and then I think, you know, just the city of Oklahoma City, state of Oklahoma, you know, Sam Presti, Billy Donovan, it's a heck of an organization. Being my first year there this past season, I was just grateful for the opportunity myself. I feel like, you know, you alluded to earlier, they have really, really good fans. Thunder fans are great. It's fun to play for them at home games. And we could feel their support from the bubble too. And just everyone in the organization, man, coaches, other players, trainers, just good people. So, you know, it was fun. It was a fun team to be on, because I think people just, you know, appreciated and respected who others on the organization and team were. There weren't people out there necessarily trying to change, you know, what they did. They were just trying to help. Everyone's trying to help each other along the way and kind of love each other for who they were. So, that was something I was really grateful for, you know, especially after having kind of bounced around to it from a few teams the year before, just being on one team for the whole year and really feeling like getting to know people. I think that's what, you know, maybe that's what, you know, led us to surprising people and having, you know, exceeding expectations.
That's awesome, man. That sounds like an amazing culture and what sports and a business is supposed to be. I mean, that's great to hear. Myers Leonard, I was talking to him yesterday and just ravishing about the Heat culture. And that sounds like there's some similarities there. And just, cause everybody always talks about the Heat culture, that, I mean, heat, all that. I mean, and it's real. And the Kool-Aid, listen to Jimmy Butler talk about the bouncing around. And it's good to hear that about other organizations as well. And especially you've been with a couple of them, so you have a good understanding of how a true team and an organization is supposed to run. Now, looking back on your year here, how do you assess it compared to the other six before this? You're just wrapping up year seven. Individually, how did you feel it went for you?
I thought it went okay for me. I didn't have a good start to the season, but – you know, I think ultimately, I feel like I grew from it. I feel like, you know, I learned a lot personally and kind of how to, approach approached off seasons. And I think the when COVID hit, having basically the season just abruptly come to an end, and not knowing when we're going to play again, if we will, this season, all that stuff. I learned a lot from that because, you know, I had to just kind of take things one day at a time and just be ready, you know, for whenever it was going to happen, or maybe it wasn't, but kind of falling in love more with the process, and falling back in love with the game. So I think, you know, my numbers and, you know, playing time and defense and stuff, I think could, I was not, I'm not necessarily happy with that from the season. But the success we had as a team and the lessons I took from the year personally and the joy that I got back, for me, for basketball, I'm really grateful for it. And in that sense, I view it personally as a good season for me.
That's awesome. What do you say was your most fun season you've had so far? Favorite team you've been on?
Honest with you, it might have been this one, Atlanta, when we went to the Eastern Conference Finals in 2014, 2015. That was fun. That was a fun run to be a part of. But, you know, this one's close, man. You know, in pro sports, you know, I think college is different. But this one was really fun. You know, I think just, I mean, it was almost a full year when you think about it.
It's wild.
Yeah, from September to, you know, when I got to OKC to then finishing basically in September in Orlando. And I never thought it would have obviously gone that route. But it was a long year, but it was fun. It was fun, man.
So moving forward, man, I think if I have this correctly, I think you have a player option coming up. I don't know. I don't even know if you're allowed to talk about it. So. You know, we'll rub the hands. Who knows? But do you have what's it gonna be, baby? Have you considered the future? Have you really not gotten to that kind of part of your line of thinking yet? And just what do you see for yourself in the future? I mean, I remember when you were still a free agent, some Rockets fans had hopes of getting a stretch big. So do you have, you know, anything in mind for the future, or are you dead set on coming back to Oklahoma, or, you know, kind of what's your outlook?
Yeah, yeah. Well, first I want to figure out when, like, free agency is going to start, because I think that's still in flux.
Yeah.
I think that's like a moving day. I could be wrong, but I think we're just going to start there, figure out when that is. And then I think I'm just going to, you know, take my time leading up to that, since I'll have it, just to, you know, kind of see, you know, obviously Billy and the Thunder have parted ways. So see what happens there. And, you know, just take my time a little bit. Enjoy some time back. I'm back in Minnesota. Zach, what part of Minnesota are you from, man? You got the 507 area code.
You got it. Owatonna, man.
Oh, okay. Nice.
You remember playing a couple of 7-footers from there?
Owatonna, yeah.
You dunked on one of my buddies pretty good. 6'8" Steinbauer. He played D2 at Concordia.
Okay.
And then Melcher, he played the same time as my class. I mean, I graduated high school in 2009, but
Oh, cool. Okay. So you're in Owatonna now still?
No, I when I graduated, I went to KU, Kansas. Then I did 3 years in Boston, did grad school out there, and then 3.5 in Kansas City. I just moved back to Minnesota last fall, but I live up in Prior Lake now.
Oh, cool. Nice, man. Yeah, I saw the area code, and I'm like, that looks familiar. And
hell yeah, man.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, but, Rich, I think, man, just going to take my time with it. I would love to be back in Oklahoma City, man. You know, like I said, it's a great fans to play for, and I've really fallen in love with the city. So I would love to do that, but just going to take my time here.
It's awesome. So what is the plans for the off season? Are you back in Minnesota now, or what's the game plan?
Yeah, I am back. I'm kind of sweating through my shirt here. I just got done doing a little garage. I turned into a little workout room. So just kind of doing that workout. I played with Mitch Onstead over.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So I played AAU for him. So I go train with him and go shoot around with him in the off season. So probably just do that, play a little bit of golf, spend time with the family and friends. And yeah, man, just kind of take it easy, keep training, and see what will happen for next year.
Man, I really want to go. I've been wanting to go to Minnesota for a while. My girl is confused. She's like, why would we go to Minnesota? But I feel like in the summertime, y'all correct me if I'm wrong, I just feel like the summertime lake life is something to be seen.
I'll get you up here, man.
All I know about Minnesota is what I've seen in the Mighty Ducks movies and Fargo. That's all I know. Like when you say Owatonna, in my head I hear it as like Owatonna, you know, like that's all I know about Minnesota. So I want to like see it. Mike, can you tell me, and Zach, can you tell me, like, food wise, is Minnesota popping? I hear, like, is there something, like, what is there out there? I would like to see it, but before I go, I want to know what I'm seeing.
We're not really known for anything outside of fish. I mean, we got amazing walleye, stuff like that. But I wouldn't say our state's specialized in one food in particular, but Minneapolis is an extremely underrated city, Minneapolis and St. Paul. I mean, I moved back here because I love it here. I mean, it's, people come home all the time for a reason. It feels like home. But I personally think even like the nature, the beauty side of it, I mean, it's one of the most underrated states there are.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. But I think we're both biased. But I think, would you agree, Zach, he should come when the state fair next year is hopefully happening in person. And that's – then he can hit a lake. The weather will be good. It'll be right around Labor Day.
What's
we'll popping
the state fair?
For sure.
Yeah, the state fair. We get it popping on the state fair. A lot of good food.
Okay. And that's what? It's in Minneapolis, St. Paul? Like, where's that?
Yeah. Right in that area.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
No, it's an awesome state, and definitely I think it's one of the most underrated just because people hate on the cold. But, yeah, the cold sucks. It really does.
How many months out the year is it cold? Like, obviously, like, in Chicago, for example, right? Like, once it's October, it's a wrap until, like, March or something. So, like, what's Minnesota like?
You never know in the Midwest, man. 3-4 months, I mean, can be longer. But global warming's happening. Minnesota's going to become a hotbed.
No, I think 3 to 4 months is being a little too generous. I could be wrong. But, Arush, I feel like, I mean – it's been a while, and I'm actually excited since the off season now is for me, like, in September, October, November. I mean, usually it's in the summer, which is great to be in Minnesota, but I'm kind of excited to experience the cold a little bit here again. But, like, once October, November comes around, I mean, it snowed here. I think last year it snowed here, or this past year, for sure in April, and I don't know if it was May, but, I mean, it can last a while, the winter, so.
Makes you want to slap somebody.
I'm a Texas boy, man. Like, up until I'm 31, up until maybe 2 years ago, I had seen snow like 3 times or 4 times in my life. Like, that's it, you know? So it's just crazy, like, to talk to people that grow up in that year in, year out. It's just wild. But that's
yeah.
So have you always came home to Minnesota in the summers, off season?
Yeah, I got a house like an hour south of Minneapolis. Nice. 3 or 4 summers ago, so I'll just go and chill here, and it's kind of, you know, out in the rural parts, just to kind of get away and chill. But before that, I would come home and like stay with my mom or stay with my dad and just chill. But
right on.
Yeah, it's kind of good just to get back here, like you said. I mean, I think home is where the heart is for everybody, so it's cool to kind of come here.
That's right.
Let's wrap up with this then. Finals picks. I mean, who you got in the next two series?
Hold up.
All right.
Before we get to the finals, who's winning game 7?
Oh, man. That's a good one. That's going to be a good game. That's tonight, huh? Because I don't know. I mean, I'm going to pull for Denver. I hope.
You want the upset?
Yeah.
I think the world's pulling for him, but, I mean, there's legacies on the line here. It's going to be wild.
Again, invoking for the millionth time, I always do this, invoking my Rockets fandom. Seeing the Clippers go down, blow a 3-1 lead again, like 5 years after the Rockets did it to them, I feel like that fan base would be I don't think you can come back from that. I mean, come on, man. That's just pain, especially for a fan base that you know, has always, or not even a fan base, but a franchise that has really never done anything, never been to the conference finals, to get that close, and then to get Kawhi and Paul George and to feel like, yo, this is our year, and to do it again, that's a backbreaker. But I just can't see Kawhi going down in game seven, honestly. I am pulling for Denver, but I'm conflicted because I would like to, I'd like to see the Lakers get bounced as well, personally. So I don't know. What about you, Zach?
I need the Kawhi versus LeBron matchup. I need it. But, I mean, Joker's throwing out all the punches right now. He's looking like Dirk times two. I mean, the dude's for real.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Okay, so let's go to the East. Celtics, Heat. Mike, what do you got?
Man, I'm pulling for the Heat in that series. They're playing great basketball. I mean, obviously Boston is too, and their series with the Raptors was phenomenal. But I'm pulling for them. I'm pulling for Miami.
Zach?
I got Boston in seven games. I mean, I've had them basically since the beginning of the playoffs, and I just think Jason Tatum's going to be the best player in that series. It's Jimmy Butler, I'd say, has the edge right now as the best player, but I just think he's Jason Tatum game by game is getting better and better. That starting five is arguably the best in the league. But, I mean, the Heat, like I've been saying, are the deepest team I can imagine since, I don't know, the 2014 Spurs, and the best chemistry I've seen as a complete team since that 2014 Spurs, which is arguably the most fun team ball I've ever witnessed in my entire life.
Yeah, Boston has been my Eastern Conference pick since before the playoffs. I love the way they play. Excuse me. Brad Stevens is a hell of a coach. He knows, you know, how to make adjustments and how to coach a team in the playoffs. And also, I think it's incredible what they've done without Gordon Hayward. I think a lot of people are kind of like taking that for granted. It's not really talked about as much. At least I haven't seen it. But I mean, dude, they got, you know, multiple 6'5", 6'7", athletic guys that can go get a bucket off the dribble. They can switch and defend. They can pretty much do it all. And I'm really, really happy to see Kemba Walker getting a chance to contribute on a bigger stage because I feel like he's been underrated for a while. So I'm going with Boston at seven as well. I really like what Miami has going on, and I love the underdog story, and I'm a huge Jimmy Butler fan. I love everything about his approach to the game. And also Goran Dragic, ex-Rocket, got a lot of love for him. And Duncan Robinson, man. I love shooters. And that boy can shoot. So, but I got the Celtics in seven. So I want Boston to win it all, personally. Boston or Miami, I'd be cool with either. But I got Celtics in seven. So let's play it out either way, Western Conference. Let's say Lakers face Denver, Lakers face Clippers. What are we looking at?
I mean, I guess I'm just going off what I'm pulling for, but the more I think about it, I mean, a Lakers-Celtics final would be kind of cool. Like a modern 2020 Lakers-Celtics matchup.
In the bubble.
In the bubble, yeah. But yeah, Lakers-Clippers, you know, Western Conference final would be really fun to watch. I mean, I'm all screwed up. I don't really, I guess, like, personally make predictions. I just kind of, like, go with my emotions, who I want to win in certain games. But yeah, I mean, tonight I'm excited for tonight. That's gonna be awesome. Game seven.
Yeah.
Lakers all day. I've had them since game one preseason. I just think LeBron AD tandem is next level. I mean, I think just pairing two players that great, it's basically Steph and KD. Even though they had more players to go along with it, I think the Lakers just always are gonna get a third party somewhere, and they got random outings game by game, and Caruso's been playing really good for them. So it doesn't really matter who their third wheel is. They just have enough talent that it can be any one of them at any given time.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I don't really have a feel on the Clippers. I think they've been really difficult to gauge. Obviously, they have, like, their ceiling is extremely high. I just don't know what I'm getting from them game to game based on these playoffs. I thought they would be wrapping people up pretty quick. And they've let opponents kind of hang around, which is usually not the mark of, like, you know, the stereotypical champion. Not that that even matters, because we don't know. But I have a general rule of not betting against LeBron James, because anytime I've done it, I've been disappointed. You know,
but always bet against him in the finals, right?
No, I ain't gonna say. I'll stay silent on that. I don't know.
No, but, numbers don't lie.
Yeah, that's true. But you know, I was surprised by the Lakers, man. I thought the Rockets were gonna really give them hell. But Frank Vogel did a hell of a job coaching. I think it's gonna be interesting to see if they ditch their big lineup, you know, and if they keep JaVale and Dwight on the bench and kind of opt for the more, you know, quote, small lineup with AD at the five. And yeah, I mean, I think boys were sleeping on Rondo too, man. Like, I've seen Rajon Rondo, who I think he's got high basketball IQ. He's like a pest. He's got all those like little kind of stereotypical qualities, and he showed the hell out against Houston. So I think he will be there. And I also think the Clippers have, and by the way, I'm assuming the Clippers win tonight, which is why I'm talking about the Clippers, but I think the Clippers have that issue that you've seen before, maybe with the Raptors in the past, where they're deep and that depth doesn't necessarily translate into the playoffs on a consistent basis. Like, you see Lou Will kind of going cold. You see Montrez going cold because sometimes there's just not enough rock to go around. So we'll see. But I got Lakers, man. I got Lakers Celtics in the finals. I can't really see LeBron losing in the conference finals. So,
well, either way, it should be some great games. It'll be fun to watch.
Indeed. So, Mike, thank you for your time, man. We appreciate it. Had a lot of fun.
Yeah, thank you guys. This is really fun.
Yeah, man.
Really appreciate it, Mike. Best of luck this offseason, and enjoy the time at home, man.
Yeah, appreciate it. Yeah, you guys take care too, and we'll stay in touch.
All right. Later. Take care.